Stevens, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
On episode 175, we have three albums we're going to be reviewing from a wide range of genres, kind of the offbeat ones. We have Slow Tie with Tyron, we have Django Django with Glowing in the Dark, and we have Pale Waves with Who Am I. In addition, we've got some singles we'll be talking about momentarily, and we've got some a wide range of news, including Morgan Wallen keeps giving us the hits. Some really spouting interesting news, and we put save the best for last, truly, as we usually do for Audio Face. Breaking news this morning from the TMZ Easter itself. It looks like Meek Mill and 6ix9ine got into a little bit of as they say across the pond, a fracas. As they say in Jeremy Clarkson's press releases.
Oh, Jesus.
So yes, this is an irreverent podcast. We will continue to stay irreverent. We're going to start with some singles. First of all, Location by Karol G, Annual AA, and J Balvin. Of the singles, of the four that we did, this actually ended up being my favorite one.
It was a good single, actually. Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot.
I like all of the features. Actually, J Balvin's part wasn't even my favorite. I liked the Annual AA bit kind of in the middle. I think that was just a really nice thing. And then the Karol G vocals really wrapped it together. I usually don't like star fucky kind of sounds.
Neither do I usually, but this one was
everyone
good.
Complimented each other and brought something different to the project. So, really nice. Next song, Bang Bang, which you were doing the bro like, fist bumping like, in the air to a moment ago. By Rita Ora and Iman Beck. Both, I think, I know Iman Beck electronic music a lot. And I think for some reason Iman Beck and Rita Ora have worked together a lot in making electronic music, if I remember correctly. But either way, not too unfamiliar for it. But I would say this is, seems like it's like a really expensive, bland sort of mix to me. The sound, I can't remember the exact sample that it is, but it's definitely like a sample that's been used before. So it's nothing.
It's whatever.
Yeah, it's like, fine, it's there. But as far as what EDM needs to be and what it could be, not quite up to snuff there, but it's whatever. Next we have My Window with Lucky Day and Mahalia. Just some pure, clean, wholesome neopop.
Neopop, yeah.
Getting in
it's
there.
It's a really good neopop song. I like it a lot. It's that chill. You're sipping on a glass of whiskey.
Yeah.
Chilling out.
If you can't stand the rain, then I can't stand the sunshine. If you can't take the pain, then I can't make your sunrise.
Lucky Day actually had a kind of a drop, I guess, this week that we just don't have time to listen to.
Yeah.
But it was 22 minutes long, and it was pretty good. Also featured, I think, a couple of songs that I think have been heard before in other contexts, but it's a really nice, like, Lucky Day sort of thing. He's really good at adding funk to neopop, and it's generally a good listen there. And then lastly, it's kind of a surprise one, Missing Out by Sid.
Yeah.
Who, other than the Disclosure song that was released last year, hasn't really released anything since 2017 or 2018. And mind you, the Disclosure song that she did the vocals on was recorded a couple years prior.
This is her first reading.
And now I'm free, and maybe in another life, you'd be mine, 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 but you're missing out. You're missing out. You're missing out.
Yeah, I'm impressed. The vocals are really good. It's kind of a slower, almost indie song. Just kind of going back to those roots in that way.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It's nice to have her back because I really liked her stuff when we reviewed it a few years ago. So I've been wanting to see more from Syd. And then when I heard the Disclosure track, I knew that they recorded that a while earlier. So I was wondering if she was just taking a break or what she was doing. So it was nice. A surprise single this morning when he dropped it out for us.
Yes. And
it's pretty good.
Yeah. Definitely looking forward to hear more from Syd. It's been a while. So we can definitely assume or like positively suggest that there could be more music coming.
I hope so.
One of those artists is definitely good to shout out for. Before we get into the news, let's go through AudioFace, all the ways you can reach out to us. Check out our YouTube channel, I almost did our old YouTube URL, youtube.com/audioface.
Yeah, YouTube.audioface.show. Just like
both ones will work. Yeah. I tried to make it as roll off the tongue as not having an official URL as possible. But that way you can go to our YouTube channel, find all of our videos. That's great. Reach out to us on social media, on Twitter or Instagram at AudioFacePod. And suggest things for us to listen to, unless you're a bot that just says, hey, I don't usually do this, but check out this music. Yeah, fuck you. Have zero followers. Get off my ass. So, anyways, if you're an actual organic.
And then all the organics on YouTube. The Lana Del Rey one was hilarious to see everybody like cry about it.
The Lana Del Rey one was too much sauce.
But a lot of people are agreeing with us, so, you know.
Yeah. So definitely, it's super fun there. Check us out on there. And it's also helpful to get, we're ramping up the amount of singles we're reviewing, trying to make sure we're doing those consistently and a good amount every single week. So you can help us in doing that. And we review all kinds of different sizes of music, too. So I've like artist following. So if it's good or it's cool, make sure we know about it. Power Report, check out powerreport.world for all the links to that. We'll have an episode soon. Let's try one next week if we can. But we'll move on to that.
yeah.
Schedule. El Delito is my new rap tag. Thank Dan, it's Friday. You can check out the replay at twitch.tv/sourcestream or watch it live at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific every single Friday. Last week was really fun. I had Ken Klippenstein, the reporter from The Intercept, on.
Freedom Fighter.
Talked about his Freedom of Information Act fighter, for sure. FOIA fighter, I guess. And I actually watched a clip that SourceStream put up on their Instagram about the, we were talking about Elon Musk. And the phrase space apartheid ended up being part of the conversation. So I'll just let that be the teaser. And you can check that out. Thank Dan, it's Friday.
You don't know what to do.
Yeah, so it is, of course it's a new one. Anyways, let's get into the music news because this is not a politics podcast.
Yeah.
But so last week we talked about Morgan Wallen, the country music star who said the N-word. And even though much of the country music
hard R,
award-winning hard R, and award-nominated. Sorry, let me not get myself.
It's only
February 14th. It's the United States of America.
It's Valentine's Day. We've got a whole lot of hard R's later on to give out.
Yeah, so. This is the United States of America. I shouldn't get ahead of myself, but the award-nominated, fastest award-nominated since. Yeah, like it was that low pump one.
Yeah, yeah.
Hard R.
Just like, it's like that in Harry Potter when he goes down, he goes, Slytherin. It's like that. It's like, hard R. It's just like pretty simple.
Yeah, that's as hard as he dropped it, literally. And so even though that happened, the country music establishment sort of came and coalesced around him and said, we're not going to tolerate this. We're not going to look like we're tolerating this. Country music obviously has not holistically, but in some parts substantially, a history of racism. And a lot of people were quick to call that out. And that was kind of reflected in the fact that sales skyrocketed, as we reported last week, of Morgan Wallen's albums and stuff, to the point where his debut album was charting like almost number one on Billboard, I think, which is crazy for country music to do. But either way, Morgan Wallen did the old Jeremy Clarkson, speaking of the before we were recording. And he says that... He does the Roseanne Barr rule.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the, I was drugged out and on a bender.
He said, I was on hour 72 of a bender. Well, how about stop being on a bender?
Okay, I've been on a good number of benders.
Yeah.
And I've said, I haven't said offensive things. I haven't said racially offensive things. Counterpoint, I've not been on benders. And I've said not racially offensive things, but pretty saucy things. Like, that's something you can kind of cognizantly control. And do, and regardless of...
It's a really shitty apology.
As the star said last week, like, that's not the first time he said the word.
100% no.
Yeah. And considering he saw a 339% increase, as we talked about last week, probably won't be the last. But, yeah, his album is number one on Billboard's album charts. They actually increased 14% in the week since week and a half since we've reported on it. So it's not as crazy as much as like the song streaming as it was isolated on its own. But the album equivalent streams are still increasing at a healthy rate for an album that was released, Wallen's Dangerous, the double album, which was released a month ago. That's still a healthy increase. So you can definitely see there's a lot of, let's say, defiant streaming of Wallen, which is fine. It's cool. We love that in this country. And there's one last story we didn't get to because we're kind of like running out all these other Morgan Wallen stuff. And that's during the Super Bowl where there are a bunch of ragers going on in Miami. Wait another week to see how the COVID numbers hit there. Apparently Diplo was using a Morgan Wallen track as a remix at one of the shows. It was playing the song Heartless. And, oh my god, TMZ has it. Do I really want to?
And also the whole thing is, it's just hilarious.
It's a really slower drop one. It's not like, I mean, it would have been almost funnier if he made it like a really hypey
type. I wish it was hypey typey.
But no, it's like a slower, like, white boy neopop kind of song.
Whatever
it is. Trap and B kind of thing. So, way to go, Diplo, by the way. Good call on that, but.
All right.
Yeah. Morgan Wallen's a bit of a jerk. But there are a lot of jerks in music, and we're going to go to another, probably, I guess it's okay to call him a jerk, but it's an interesting artist nonetheless. Slow Tie has released an album, Tyron, that exists. It's 14 songs long, 35 minutes long. This is an interesting one for the album or drop rule.
Yeah, it's like on the border of album or drop. I want to say it's an album, because... Why? The amount of tracks that are on there, and when I listen to it fully, it feels like complete enough to be an album. But this is the shortest you could have an album.
Yeah. This is like, I would definitely consider this 35 minutes, which is almost in any other way a drop.
Yeah.
But 14 songs is a lot. You have 14 pretty coherent,
exactly. You have a couple featured artists, and everything goes together relatively well, actually.
It's not necessarily a double album because it's way too short, but it has two different concepts, and it's very similar to Jasmine Sullivan's album. It's very highly conceptual, like Jasmine Sullivan's album, but that one didn't have two parts necessarily. This one definitely has like a trappier, go harder part, which is the first half where all the titles are in caps, and then where all the titles are in hipster Tumblr lowercase. It is then all kind of like the more moodier, slow tie, so to speak. But yeah, overall, I was surprised at how not bad it was.
I actually liked it, which I never thought in a million years I would like Slow Tie. You already know me; I've said it before. Well, you know me as the anti trap guy, right? That's what I do in Audio Face. But I've already said, like, on the Gorillaz track, I didn't mind him on there. And then for,
Momentary Bliss.
For Momentary Bliss for Gorillaz. And then on Energy for Disclosure's track, I thought he was okay. I didn't really like his part on there. I like Amity's part a little bit more. So I was saying, I don't really fuck with his stuff. I've tried to before, but I haven't really liked it. But it's the first time I actually enjoyed most of this album. Especially, I like the top half more than I like the bottom half, which I am shocked. I've noticed one thing. I actually really like him with, having features. I think it's really nice to compliment. So the Cancelled and Mazza with Cancelled Skepta and the Mazza with ASAP Rocky, I actually really like those tracks back to back. Cancelled Skepta is the most British fucking rap song you will ever hear in your goddamn life. Because it's like Pyramid Stage and Glastonbury. Girls in the crowd got their hands on me. I bet you wanna cancel who? Fuck with the cult, now the gang's on you. I'm a vampire, got the fangs on you. Now you're dripping blood. How you gonna cancel me? 20 awards on a mantelpiece. Pyramid stage at Glastonbury. Girls in the crowd got their hands on me. I bet you wanna cancel who? Fuck with the cult, now the gang's on you. I'm a vampire, got the fangs on you. Now you're dripping blood. It's just the most, it's so thick, the accents. And I normally don't like British hip-hop or rap because sometimes, and that's my one gripe with Slow Tie, him by himself, is sometimes his accent is so thick it can kind of contrive a little too much off of the track. But him with Skepta and ASAP Rocky, it was fantastic, actually. It was hyped, it was fun, the beat was actually very good, production was very good, too, when he got to his own stuff, it was good too, but then when you started doing the slower stuff, that's when you could hear his accent a little bit more on, yeah. Like, I mean, tried and focus. And
I'll say at least I appreciate, as a semi-Brit myself, I appreciate some Chav representation here.
Oh,
of,
yeah.
Like, the underclass a little bit. But I can definitely agree with, even I was first listening to you Cancelled, and I was like, I, as someone who's even sort of partial to Skepta, more so than almost most people in America, was just like,
oh, I like
an
Skepta.
Interesting sort of like, Skepta, voice but. Kind of thing that could be for certain people and then not for other people. But yeah, I was surprised with how well it generally worked out through the album. The collaborations really, they're very smart where they were placed.
Yes.
Throughout the album, more broadly, kind of speaking from a higher view of things, I think when the, Slow Tie does a really good way of doing songs through his own. There's like a run through that are like, I'd say kind of more all over the place. That's more like when he's exploring on his own. But it still kind of goes like on its own. I kind of liked Dead really nicely. It sticks out as I See King on its own. But standalone tracks, they work kind of nicely. Even though there's one that's like 49 or 48 seconds, it feels like it's had its place even transitioning to the album. Everybody dies, say it once, said it once. Everybody dies. My vida loca true, I lead this crazy life. Tune banging in the motor, gun fingers to the sky. And I, whereas there are many other artists who, even in this short time frame, will do some really stupid stuff with their time and make it make no sense. At least these are kind of, again, the latter album is part of the album is more introspective, but these still feel like there's more substance there. But then to my point that I was making a little bit earlier about how the features in the album are put together really nicely through that middle part where you have a bunch of Slow Tie just like cucking around with himself, you get a really nice little bit with Terms with Dominic Fike and Denzel Curry, and then Push with Dead Never after that. And they're a really nice
reprieve
from sometimes Slow Tie's inner thoughts, which can be kind of chaotic, but also they inject enough to where it allows Slow Tie to rise to that level and create a really good song with him. I woke up and came to terms with it. No matter what, they get my worst twist. Whatever works, it could be worse. Shit could be worse. Every day I bad headache, wrong side of the bed with a migraine. Need ibuprofen instead of smoke zoots, trying to reboot, trying to get new, but a stake in my boot. Never push a man who's got nothing to lose. I'm supposed to be grateful for nothing. Grateful may do turn nothing to something. It's not like rescue efforts. We have a lot of trap albums where it's like, this sucked, but one or two of the features made it bearable.
Yeah.
It's like, no, your features, you're exploring your own way. Good for you. Might not work for everyone. But the features also, I mean, like when you're on your own, but your features really help lift you up.
Yeah, and they do. And they complement it perfectly because Slow Tie by himself is a lot to digest and it can be too much for certain people. But then when he puts it in with a bunch of features, it helps to offset his insanity, which is good. But I'm honestly impressed with it. It was nice to really have that more introspective and slower part with him because you haven't really heard that from him too often, like a little bits here and there in his discography. But usually it's like really in your face, it's experimental, it's crazy. That's what he's known for. He's known for his persona and the stuff he did with the Enemy Hordes. It's a decent album. I was going in there waiting to just be like, all right, I want to rip Slow Tie apart. I was waiting for it for this year, and I go, oh shit, I actually enjoyed it.
Yeah, because I think
this really
album,
surprised.
I think this album was delayed. It was supposed to come out a little bit later last year, and then it was delayed even another week within this year. But it turned out being generally well. What was your favorite song of like the latter half of it?
I liked NHS a lot, actually.
Huh.
Sandwiched in between all of the the featured, because it's his like trap and B fuckboy song. Fight sequence, my demons, pride feelings, die dreaming, no glass ceiling, try peeling back layers to find meaning, root feeling. What you're given is all you're needing, try breathing. You might find freedom instead of squeezing up your buttocks, trying to hold this shit in. Huh? You know what I mean? But it's actually good because, again, it's that introspective, slower down song and stuff. And it's one of the ones I can kind of handle the accent within it, where it's like, okay, it fits. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So I like that part.
I can hear you on that. I think this is a really solid album. We'll give the arbitrary scale in a moment. But I think it's worth a listen to definitely dig into Slow Tie. It's definitely one of Slow Tie's more approachable works.
For sure.
Slow Tie can have a lot of stuff that has been polarizing even for us.
Yes.
But we tried to come into this with a pretty open mind. I didn't even like Nothing Great About Britain that much came out in 2019. It's like, okay, but I don't know. I have a kind of a little bit hot take that I don't know if it's fully baked, that Slow Tie might be the next Damon Albarn, because I think he's like weird and like hates England enough to maybe do England. It. Yeah. But his last album was called Nothing Great About Britain.
Yes, yes.
But this is a really solid, Tyrone's a really solid album. I think it's really approachable for people who are new to Slow Tie and represents a really decent growth of Slow Tie, which is what we like on Audio Face. Speaking of what we like on Audio Face, arbitrary scales. This one this week for these clips is Senate vote margins without budget reconciliation. So filibusters allowed, which means filibusters the only way you can go.
Yeah, this is the only way, yeah.
And so you need... even though in a normal civilized system, 51 out of 100 means you win. This is America, so 60 out of 100 means you win.
Yes.
So, with that being said, I would give this album... I'll give it a safe 74.
Yeah, 74? Yeah, I was going to give it a 70 and an unruly mob outside the White House waiting.
If it would be any of the three we've got here, it's probably Skeptic Slow Tie.
So, yeah, exactly.
I have a hard time seeing an unruly mob for Pale Waves.
No. That's the unruly mob all on Tumblr or Reddit.
I mean, barely even that. Let's move on. I'm optimistic that we can get before the next album review without this thing. So...
this is interesting.
Yeah, moving on. Radiohead's Colin Greenwood. I think one of the more understated members, but I'm also a bass player. So
he's a fucking good bass player. Yeah. Some of the songs on Radiohead, I'm like, I don't know how the hell you keep time, especially with Phil Selway's drumming, but it works.
Where I End and You Begin, because at this point in Audio Face, but we'll change that this year. We haven't talked that much about Radiohead, hint, hint. But one of my favorite bass lines I've ever had to learn and deconstruct was Where I End and You Begin. Because it's just like...
That's my favorite Radiohead song.
Dude, what? Your favorite Radiohead song changes from years to years. Okay, more on that later.
More on that later.
Anyways,
there's a list.
Colin Greenwood has decided to throw his hat into the ring and kind of pin a Guardian op-ed. Defending the fact that has been a point that's been made a lot recently with Brexit especially, that the way that Brexit is turning out and working right now, where it's going to be harder for artists to get visas to travel throughout the European Union, they're going to have to go through extra paperwork, it's going to be extra fees, etc., that a lot of new up-and-coming artists aren't going to have the similar chance at off of Britain's success, outside of England's success, as Radiohead did. And so you're basically taking away these opportunities from new and up-and-coming artists in England, which Brexit's a very nationalistic kind of bill, is sort of ironic.
Yeah. And there's the amount of artists that come out of England is insane. So it's something that is near and dear to their hearts, and it's smart. Here's one of his statements. He says, "It is time for the UK government to admit it didn't go enough for the creative industries during the Brexit negotiations and look to renegotiate on provision for touring in Europe. My country's music is great because it scorns borders and boundaries. Yes. It is a great patriotic source, a force of confidence, joy, and shared passions. I am proud of my country and all the music it has exchanged with the world, and I am sure that pride is felt across all ages and cultures in the UK. It is the antithesis of the culturally pinched nationalism that is Brexit, and its diminishment would deprive us all." Which is exactly the point. It's the ironic part is it's one of their biggest exports is music.
Yeah. And if you're saying pro England, England's a great country, England's the best, then
show off their musicians.
Show off your media, show off your art. Americans love them some British Broadcasting Corporation. And so, they love the shows that come from that. They love the content in the media, and they make a lot of money doing that because BBC World is a private company, whereas BBC in England is a publicly run, semi-private, like, sort of scheme, right? Yeah. And so they make a shit ton of money internationally off of exporting their culture. Mm-hmm. And so if you make it harder for the next generation to do that, that's only going to do everything you supposedly hate.
Yeah, exactly.
About multiculturalism, which shows the whole thing being bullshit, but... That's the most we'll skirt into politics, because we've talked about Brexit a lot, even this year, and it's only February. Meanwhile, in the irony corner, Bruce Springsteen was arrested for driving under the influence in New Jersey. This was right after a Super Bowl ad aired where Bruce Springsteen was driving for Jeep. Yes. And so he got in a little bit of trouble. Jeep pulled the ad because they were like, dude. But I kind of think the funny thing out of this is that... New Jersey's legal threshold is 0.08, and he blew a 0.02. So it's like he's under the limit.
He's in the limit, technically.
And I'm kind of not surprised. I mean, it's... I think the limit depends on the state, for sure.
Yes.
But of course, in the Northeast, the limits are a little bit healthier, because it's the Northeast. But, like...
The limits are a little healthier. Okay.
I'm just saying, it's a cold part of the country, and it's apparent in the I love all the listeners of Audio Face from that part of the country. It's just a interesting, but yeah, it was very.
It's just hilarious that the commercial like popped up for the Super Bowl ad, and then that arrest happened during it. They're like, we got to pull the ad. Spent all that time, all that money on the ad, all of looking forward to it, and
yeah, maybe Super Bowl ads are a waste of time.
Yes.
Huh. More on that. Well, no, whatever. Moving on to the second album of the episode, Django Django's Glowing in the Dark. It is 13 songs, 44 minutes long.
Yep.
And this is a kind of surprising one to me. I was sort of like kind of, you know, meh-ish on Django Django. I heard some things that were like, you know, pretty decent alternative. Yeah. I'd also heard some things that were just generally bland. Mm-hmm. But this album kind of rocks.
Like, it's good. It's really just solid indie album. I like it a lot. That it has that surf rock influence, has that bunch of influences from alternative, from indie, a bunch of like combined into it, and it's a solid album. Yeah,
yeah. It's really just no bullshit alternative to me.
Yeah.
Spirals kind of is a really nice intro song. It builds up very slowly and starts
it's a longer opening track. I think around like 5 minutes or something like that, but. It's a solid opening to what you're going to get for the rest of the album. And the rest of the album, the song's all around like 2.5-3 minutes or so.
Yeah.
So I actually like it being a longer track at the beginning because it sets you in for the mood and the pacing for the rest of the work. So Spirals was fantastic
track
at the beginning.
You're right about setting the pace because then Right the Wrong starts to be like a really fast-paced, it's like sort of drum
beat. Yeah, it reminds me a lot of like Dive's first album. Mm. It's similar to that like fast paced surf indie rock style. It's
totally
and it's something I love that style a lot. It's something I've always liked. So it's a great second track going into it too. But there's a lot of different sounds in here too, because the nice thing with this is it's not bland. There's a lot of different variety onto the album. So there's pulling from different influences, like I said earlier. And like the fourth track, you have Waking Up featuring Charlotte Gainsbourg. And that's I like it because it's more like a slower, like acoustic indie track. With her, Charlotte's voice is fantastic.
Oh yeah,
to compliment it, I really, really like her.
I
voice.
I love that chorus. Yeah. It's one of my favorite things. Like, it's such a really good alternative hook.
Yeah, so really good placement. We've had a good features today, so which is nice.
Yeah,
and I think this year in general, we've had a lot of good experiences with features. Finally.
There's still the rest of the year for us to be let down.
So I'm just waiting for featuring Quavo or some shit. So you know, I will not be not let down.
We could. I'll always say the thing we always say every single year of Audio Face. It's Infrastructure Week. No, this could be the year we get Culture 3.
I can't wait for Culture 3. Just one day. That's gonna be the end of the podcast.
Oh man. But yeah, that's since we're getting to the topic of features, it's actually the only feature on the album.
Yes.
And so a lot of times albums, especially an alternative and indie, can't always carry the album by themselves and have variety in that mm-hmm. album. This is not the case.
No,
still continues really good.
Because the song right after that, Free From Gravity, is almost like a early 2000s experimental-ish alternative song where it has like little electronic beat in the middle, and
yeah.
it has like the synth drums and stuff. So again,
but not advanced synth. It's like 2003 Yamaha keyboard.
That's
synth.
What I was saying. Exactly. It's like that early 2000s like Postal Service style
yeah.
of alternative rock. And so those first five songs are all quite different in that regard, which is great, which is very, very good for opening. The biggest thing is they're all cohesive, though. They all sound like Jingle Jingle. They all go together in that regard. There's not one that sounds out of place for that opening
yeah.
part of the album, which for that amount of different sounds is difficult to do. But then in the middle of the album, like Head Rush and The Arc, then you'll get to more of like the sound of the album, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
then you'll get more into... Even The Arc is a little bit different, too, because it's a little bit slower, but that's more of like your solid alt-indie rock, and it's pretty good.
The Arc, Tammy actually said, sounded a lot like Massive Attack. Which
yeah,
is a really
yeah.
good like thing. I was thinking it was very similar to that. And I think it's really cool. I think there have been a couple of songs that are very like love to the genre itself. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about Chromatica last year,
yep.
where different bits of the album were different parts of electronic music
mm-hmm.
put together in a pop Lady Gaga context. And this sort of feels like that in a way for some of like the deeper cuts of alternative. It sounds really nice. Even The Arc has like a thing in the middle where it sort of like deconstructs like a Massive Attack
yeah,
song
man,
and
it's
comes back.
Slow and then goes back.
Almost like
builds,
the
yeah.
Rocky sort of electronic music that was sort of like that bridge overlap again, like the early
yeah.
2000s.
Yeah. And then skipping a little before it, after that, you have what might be my favorite song on the album, Kick the Devil Out. It's really, really good. It has all of the elements I like of a good alternative indie rock song are in there.
Idle the time away, just look how far you have strayed. Up to your same old tricks, but I see straight through you now. Couple of days, no more, I'm living with the devil. Why do I still keep slow?
Guitar. Really like it's understated, it's twangy, it's fun, drums are fantastic, vocals, everything, it's what I like into it, and it sounds modern, it sounds something that's improved upon, and it's fresh, and it's a good track.
Yeah, I was gonna say Night of the Buffalo is actually my favorite
that's
on
a good
the
track
album
too.
But Kick the Devil Out upon like another listen is also like really my favorite. It's just everything you said is absolutely rings true. It feels super modern.
Yeah, and I'm genuinely impressed with this album a lot. Speaking of, like, obviously a big indie head here. So my worry of indie was that it was starting to become too, like, nostalgic making, if that makes sense, where people are trying to really hone in on a specific sound, you know, that 90s sound. A lot of people have been making stuff into that, which is good. I mean, we have B2B, who's made a really good album last year, and a couple other artists and stuff who have made decent tracks. But now this is that solid of... What can you make a alternative rock, alternative indie rock album, but push it forward? There hasn't been too many good examples of that, and this is a perfect example of how to modernize it and push it forward.
Yeah. And you said it very well, so I'm just going to shut up for once. The rest of the album is very good and kind of lets the album land in a nice place. Glowing in the Dark has a really fun, almost like Chuck 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 vibe, where it has a synth thing that's fun. It has those sort of like, mm-hmm. not high-pitched, not quite falsetto, but fun sort of dance.
I really like that track too. That's probably my second favorite. I love those two back, Kick the Devil and Glowing in the Dark. It's it's awesome when a band can pull that off where you have two very different sounds again, but it still is cohesive. It's something you don't get to see every day.
It's album artistry, just putting an album together. I'd say even more than the Tyrant Slow Tie album that we reviewed earlier.
100%.
This goes nicely as an album.
Yes.
For not that much more time. I mean, 35 minutes for that previous album to 44 for this. I'll take that extra 9 minutes for like a little bit more.
Because there's no track I would remove. There's nothing that I would say, eh, it feels long. It doesn't feel long. It feels perfect. It's concise.
Yeah.
Everything belongs where it needs to be. And again, it's great. The last two songs, like Hold Fast, almost reminds me of like some like older LCD Sound System tracks where it's like a slower beginning and stuff within it and then goes like crescendos up, because that's again one of our longer ish songs, like 450 or 5.
Yeah,
445. Yeah. So again, that building track and then just kind of like that groovy dance alt rock, which again, that older LCD Sound System sound.
Yeah, love even it. Like older Arcade Fire.
Yeah, you could go order right? Like Suburbs Era of Arcade Fire. You could definitely make that comparison too.
Yeah.
So we're making good comparisons of works that like hits the eras of previous works but modernizes it.
Which, oh yeah, again, this all sounds modern.
Which I again, you haven't heard too many examples of. So fantastic album. And the last track, Asking for More, is more of your standard alt rock. But it's perfect because there's so much experimentation towards that latter half, that perfect fit and a good ending track for it.
Yeah. And yeah, it's definitely like the most understated song on here, which is why it's great at the end to kind of close it out.
Because there's so much to listen to. There's less to listen to, as one famed Johnny Greenwood says.
Yeah.
That it's a perfect ending track for it because if you had another track that was similar to the middle or closer to the end, I think it would have felt a little too experimental, but having that one to wrap it up is perfect. So
there's different kinds of albums. We review ones where you want like a really nice like weekend style album
exactly,
like, brings the experience together. But then there's one where you just like land the plane, sir. Land the plane, sir.
You had a great flight and you don't want any turbulence. Don't wake the baby.
Yeah,
and you didn't wake the baby, so good job.
Arbitrary scale this week, Senate vote margins without budget reconciliation, so you need 60 over 100 to be good.
You need that filibuster, baby.
Yeah, this is the United States bombing any country in the Middle East. This is 97 out of 100.
Oh, there's 97.
There's only three senators who have a conscience.
Yeah, Bernie's the only one yelling, why are we bombing this country? Yeah. Everybody's like...
It's like Bernie Sanders, Ed Markey, and like Mitt Romney, because he wants to be the different one. Because he's just built different.
Rip mommy.
Yes.
It was funny. I was gonna say this is a 60s, 70s America voting on a coup attempt. So you know, 97 out of 100. Yeah, it's a solid like majority, 100%.
Yes, majority report. So, we just talked at extensive length about Django Django, who did a really good job of making an amazing album. And Django Django is a younger band for sure than Weezer, who we're talking about now, of course. But there's a point to be made about how you can take older sounds and make them nicer and sound cooler, or you can just forget you're a band and just like fuck around as like a weekend project thing. And so Weezer kind of let loose them in the press tour for their most recent album that we said was not terrible for Weezer, but like that's a very low bar to set.
Exactly. It wasn't 3.6 drunk and not great, not horrifying, but OK Human was... It's just bland. It's the best way to put it.
Well, good news for us. There's four more Weezer albums coming apparently down the pipe. among them, there's going to be one that might be inspired by Franz Ferdinand.
Which is going to be interesting because Franz Ferdinand has a lot of different sounds. So
yeah.
Which era of Franz Ferdinand do you
basically want? Each four of the sounds, much like as the Weezer does, they're just like not really iterating. I'm going to use like a polite word and say they're inspiring their albums from different existing sounds and different existing bands. So they're going to do something like that. But he said, we also want to do a Weezer-inspired album, which is one of the dumber things I've ever heard. Because he said that he wants to... frontman, he said he wants to do an album that is an iteration off of some of their older works, but done in a new way.
So you want to be a band for once and actually do something that we've been telling you to do for a decade plus.
Exactly. It's like you don't they don't get it.
Like, then what the hell have you been doing this entire time?
It's like,
trying to sound like you as a person, you know, as in like you're an artist, so you have a voice to say, but you always improve upon that voice. So what have you been doing? Just alter egos of dog shit past 10 years?
Yeah.
Is that why Pacific Daydream is one of the worst things you still to this day that we reviewed on Audioface?
Like, you just, bands, take note. Be yourselves, but take new inspirations from different places.
New ideas.
And start to implement that into your music and that push it forward that way. Like, get some new inspiration from different places. But a lot of artists, it's very, very apparent the more we do the show, don't even like to do that.
Yep.
Moving on, Justin Timberlake for one of our classiest awards. I'll say it a little bit later because I know how YouTube demonetizes things if you say them too quickly in the beginning of videos. But like,
smart man.
Justin Timberlake has apologized to Britney Spears and Janet Jackson. Lately, Britney Spears' story of being just like abused generally in Hollywood has come out very clearly and publicly. There's a documentary that a lot of people are seeing that I believe the New York Times did. Yes. That shows how Britney Spears was seen as like a crazy person in media, and I was egged on by a lot of celebrities, Justin Timberlake included, and how it led to the situation where she basically doesn't have control over her life. Check out the documentary.
I think she just won
conservatorship.
Her ownership of her own stuff over her father or something like that.
Yeah.
Which we talked about
before. A good decade didn't have.
Yeah, exactly. Like the whole Taylor Swift saga where Taylor Swift just re-recorded one of her themes. She's like, I guess I gotta re-record this shit because men like owning women. Fucking misogynistic music industry.
Justin Timberlake did the old Instagram
Instagram notes app screenshot. Yep.
But we might have to make that an award.
Have to, because that's been there's already been like 3 instances of that this year. So
it's been a long time coming. It's the gold standard for apologizing, other than filming a video with your front-facing camera in a stall to send to the BBC because you accidentally hit a producer. Justin Timberlake said, I've seen the messages, tags, and comments and concerns. I want to respond. I'm deeply sorry for the times in my life where my actions contributed to the problem, where I spoke out of turn, or did not speak up for what was right. I understand that in the moments I fell short, as many others benefited from a system that condones misogyny and racism. I've not been perfect in navigating all this throughout my career. I know this apology is a first step and doesn't absolve the past. I want to take accountability for my own missteps and all this and support and be a part of a world that uplifts and supports. I mean, a lot of it kind of sews in about how Justin Timberlake made fun of Britney Spears and their like relationship and breakup after the breakup, describing a lot of like their sexual activities and behaviors and kind of like doing that in the press. And again, it's kind of like directly benefiting from misogyny and culture that was not to apologize for today, but definitely way worse, even in like the early 2000s. Justin Timberlake, of course, took absolutely no blame for the Janet Jackson nip slip that kind of like cratered a lot of Janet Jackson's career at that point.
Yeah, it did, for sure.
And Janet Jackson still really hasn't responded so much, even though one of her songs got on the Billboard charts this year that hasn't been on the charts in many years. She spoke out about that, and she was very appreciative among this drama happening. But she's not speaking about this drama and hasn't talked to Justin Timberlake in years, because why would you?
Because
there's that whole Super Bowl nip slip thing, and because of America being a, oh no, titties on television, we can't have that. HBO licking their chops, like. but it just goes to show that Justin Timberlake kind of only just now realizing the harm he's done and just now apologizing for it. This is a decent-ish apology.
At least, yeah. It's like there's this double-edged sword. At least he's saying something, but at the other end, you didn't do enough, bud.
Yeah, this is nearly 20 years too late. You shouldn't have done it in the beginning. It's not just like, oh, there's a lot of stuff over here. It's like we're not even going to the Britney Spears stuff. It was pretty fucked up. Because we're a little bit later into the video, we're nominating Justin Timberlake for the What's Rapey About That Award.
If you wonder why we named that award, that is after Pharrell Williams saying that after Blurred Lines.
After realizing belatedly.
After realizing like 10 years after the song that this sounds pretty shitty again for women.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the tone of the award, because we live in the area of AudioFace. We have to overexplain the award names now.
There's a lot of new listeners. They're like, oh my God, who are these guys? And they're like,
Justin Timberlake didn't. We know. But yeah, it's basically men who understand the error of their ways way too late when it was way too severe.
Yes.
That's the award. Anyways.
Anywho's.
Are we feeling lucky? Let's feel lucky. Let's see how it goes. Who Am I by Pale Waves. Can you give us the specs on that?
Pale Waves, Who Am I? It is 11 songs, 33 minutes long.
Yes, Pale Waves is a band from the Dirty Hit and Associates.
The Dirty Hit and Associates of just pumping out records.
Pumping out really interesting, subversive indie music.
I mean, you have the Japanese House, B2B, the 1975, Pale Waves, No Rome.
Yes.
So many more, too.
Yes, from this family, Sean has introduced me and others on the podcast to them. And so this is Pale Waves' sophomore project?
Yes, because we reviewed... I don't remember if we reviewed it or if I brought it
music
up.
Recommendations.
I think it was a recommendation of My Mind Makes Noises for their first album, because I thought it was a solid indie album. I thought there was the only issues I had was that it could feel bland at times for me when I listened to it, especially now listening to it again this past year and now leading up to this album, because I wanted to see what they would do with this one. I definitely still have the same complaints on it, but I did like it. And the one thing with Who Am I is they definitely pushed their sound forward, for sure. They definitely changed it up. It is not too similar to their first album at all, which is good. There's still some complaints I have on that, but more on that later. I want to hear what you're going to say on this.
I like the beginning of the album, for sure, the way it starts with Change. It matches the album cover aesthetic of like late 90s, almost blur. Like Third Eye Blind, Blur kind of like... Yeah. Not quite punk, but like... depressy grunge rock
that's
almost poppy in that way. Pale Waves hits that to a T, but it's really modern for 2020 or 2021.
Yes. Going on to like more of the middle album might be the only like problems I'll have with it. So like Wish You Were Here, I felt like going back into my Django review early in the podcast, I feel like that's too throwbacky to the 90s sound for that one track, where I thought that's just, it's one of those things where I had my issues with indie of maybe it's a little too much of a throwback and I want a little bit more sound. But the rest going after that song, they get more into really diving into themselves. Because you have Tomorrow right after Wish You Were Here. Fantastic, fun indie track. It's fast, blowing up. I forget the lead vocalist. I think her name is Heather, I think. Don't quote me, boy, if I haven't said shit. That her voice is now maturing a lot more. It's like getting into it and it's sounding very, very good now. And... that middle part of the album after Wish You Were Here, I started to really enjoy it. I got worried there for a second. I go, okay, they're just going to do the more of that throwbacky-ish sound, but not put too much of their own spin on it. But now they're starting to develop more into the album.
I think more, I'm a little bit more harsher in my thing. Where Change was a good note where it seemed like they're going to do the sound and explore it more. But then Fall to Pieces sounded like Change too. And then even You Don't Own Me, which is the song after Tomorrow, sounds a little bit too similar to even Tomorrow. And it's like grungy thing it's going for. Where like, I'd like Tomorrow on its own. But in the context of an album, it's like they didn't know how to explore taking that kind of sound beyond just like throwing in some more of like the mid-tens bliss points in a way.
Yeah.
And so like, it's almost like I wanted... Each song felt like it had a double right next to it, almost.
Yeah. And that's something that I noticed, too. They would have, because then you have I Just Needed You, which is probably my favorite track on the album.
Yeah.
That one, it's then getting more, really diving into them as a band and as a group and saying, okay, what does Pale Waves sound like? This is a track that sounds like Pale Waves. Going back to their debut album and now going to their second album, fantastic sound. This is something that I want them more to do of, you know, having all of their influences and everything, put it into one track, but then again, pushing forward as we always like to do on Audio Face. And the end of the album slows it down a little bit. You have more like acoustic pieces and stuff.
Run 2 isn't as slow, but it reminds me kind of like I call it Vans Warped Tour rock.
Vans Warped.
But you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, 100%.
It's like sort of like My Chemical Romance, like rock bands of that time and that period. But in a good way.
In a good way, yeah. Because there's two ways you could do that. You could do it in the MCR way, which is the good way, or you can do it in a extremely super angsty teenage band that only like lasts for 3 months because the singer and the bassist step with each other while the guitarist is there like, hey, what about me then? And then they broke up. Yeah.
Yeah.
We all know that one band in high school.
Yeah. They definitely did it in a good way here. And it's that thing where they have the potential to take these sounds and make it sound good.
Yeah.
It needs to...
There's still some refining they need to do. They are getting closer there. They are... Because their first album, looking back on it, there is a lot of things I would like to improve upon. And this is a step in the right direction. There's still more I want from them because now they're really showing their talent. They're showing, wow, they can make decent music now. But it's okay. It's almost like the B2B where, okay, what do you do now? Because also, this is a pretty short, I would consider this a drop because it's 33 minutes.
11 songs, yeah.
11 songs. So it's one of those where now, if you have a little bit longer of an album, because I know My Mind Makes Noises was a long album. Yeah, it was a 14 song, 15 minutes long. So now, if you make another LP, really, what sound do you want to do?
To make a decision and go to it because they can't do much more of this slight tweaking off of old things.
Yeah, they have to push forward and experiment and do and see where do they want their sound to be. So they're at a crossroads basically of, okay, you've made two decent albums. There's still some work and stuff you have to do, but where do you go from here? So we just need to see where they go, but step in the right direction. I like it.
Yeah, I think it's all right. I think there's some songs that stick out.
But yeah,
it's probably that has that growing pains of a band.
And by the way, Who Am I? Very, very good closing track, by the way. Yeah. Slowing Down, and that's one of the strongest tracks on the album, too. This Who Am I? Who am I?
So I would definitely say that as well.
And going on that, I would love more of this sound because this is something that you don't hear too many influences. This just sounds like Pale Waves. That's it. And that's what you want. So, yeah, more of that.
Arbitrary scale this week. Senate vote margins without budget reconciliation. So filibuster is required. I give this a 62. Out of 100.
62. Yeah, I was gonna say 61. Like you just passed, so you know the country's gonna be up at arms. You know, like how it is.
Yeah.
And but it legally, you gotta bye bye.
Those two senators might not be reelected.
No, they're definitely not gonna be reelected.
Yeah, they just lost their careers over that vote.
But they're like, my conscience is good.
Yeah, they stuck their necks out in that.
Exactly.
Speaking of conscience, we always like to end. There's really nothing there, as speaking of. There is no segue there. We always like to end Audio Face in a fun note. And why not end Audio Face in the best of notes with a little bit of TMZ?
Dun, dun, dun.
So it would appear the case here. We have a case, an instance, a kerfuffle, if you will, where 6ix9ine and Meek Mill were outside of a club in Atlanta. Never mind that it's COVID-19. We're still doing clubs in Atlanta right now. And 6ix9ine was out there with his, I guess, begrudging bodyguards going, oh, shit, guess I have to do another one of these dumb things again. waiting for Meek Mill and his, DeKalb County Country Club attire.
he definitely hit 36 holes that day, you know.
Decatur Regional Golf Course.
Yeah.
So we have to go into the video that was at least caught here of 6ix9ine basically trying to do what he's been said publicly he's going to attempt to do, at least in his rhetoric, which is have, this is so dumb to put out, but like he wants to expose other rappers for being snitchy or like being like snitches or for being like too entrained or with the police.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like classic deflection because he's the one who literally got off for snitching and like one of the biggest court cases in the century where like the New York Times called him a snitch.
Yes. Everybody called you a snitch. You are known for a snitch and you had to hand out your albums to people to give for free on the streets because it was so bad.
But he's just doing these publicity stunts for fun. So
yeah.
Let's watch and have some fun.
Let's just do it.
That's a fact, you pussy. That's a fact, you pussy. Hey, you security! This is security? That's security, you pussy! Look! Shut up! Shut up! Hey, you with a cop! Look, you tight! Hey, you with police! Hey, you with police! Look, that's the cop! That's the cop! You pussy!
Saying he's with the police.
That's pussy!
At least it didn't say anything.
I was waiting for it.
Pussy. Look, okay, maybe they took it out. We don't got no security. I got my own fight on
here
the security.
My guy.
That's the cop. That's the pussy.
This is a sick look of why.
You know, that's the other side.
You're a bitch. Fuck you up. You're a bitch. All y'all pussies.
Beautiful.
Dude. So
beautiful.
Meek Mill tweeted just afterwards, 6ix9ine waited outside the club for me. They trying to get us. WTF. I hope that rat going live to apologize to the people he told on or the victim. Y'all forgot that fast a rat killed Nipsey. He wasn't supposed to be on the streets. That's the only thing I'm gonna say because he's dead. Left his baby mom and child like a coward as targets. And so that was kind of like that last tweet was in response to the fact that 6ix9ine went on like an Instagram live later this morning as we're talking, kind of like trying to give his side of the story. And it's again the same thing, like he's exposing the rats as opposed to him being a rat, which is in a weird time where like I've been one of the more harsher people on Meek Mill in general. I think the whole like free Meek Mill thing was kind of like a ridiculous effort and not the way to like say like this is where Black Lives Matter stands. It's on Meek Mill and his like dumbassery. But like once again, I'm in the odd position. Once again, I'm in the odd position where I defend Meek Mill.
100% we defend Meek Mill on this because the 6ix9ine's only doing this just to get publicity because he's running out of money.
He can't even sell albums. The old thing he used to do to get publicity or like get attention
was to sell albums.
Fake gangbanging can't do that anymore. Fake selling albums can't do that anymore. So what he's gonna do? Fake ambushing mobsters like he's some wannabe Alex Jones.
And you suck.
Yeah. What does it mean to play us out?
Thank you for listening to Audio Face, you wonderful viewer, and like the two bots that are harassing us, leave us alone. You can find me at SW Suarez on all social media platforms if I trust you. You can follow Dan at Dan from the web on Twitter and Dan from the internet on Instagram. You can follow the Audio Face, Audio Face Pod at all of our social medias, and you can go on youtube.com//audioface to Audio Face Pod to watch your stuff, or if you're a real one, you know, youtube.audioface.show, the original.
All works. We make it easy on you.
Yeah.
We're going to come back next week. We're going to have some albums to review, and it's going to be very fun, as it always is. Thank you very much for listening and watching. We'll talk to you then.
Bye.
Cheers.
Thanks, Peter.